As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. Today, I had the honor of sitting down with Dennis Crowley, the founder of Foursquare, and we talked about achieving greatness and the sacrifices it takes to do the things that we want to do in life, right? There's always a give and a take. So we dove deep into that. We also talked about the early days of Foursquare, from their meteoric rise and their launch at South By to the behind-the-scenes struggles that actually happened in the months following that were never really talked about publicly. So Dennis shares some of his time afterwards trying to raise money for this thing, Foursquare, that seemed kind of foreign to investors. They didn't really believe in it. And then we talked about what Foursquare is today and how Dennis is spending his time. So it's a really great interview. I'm so glad we get to share it in full. We originally pulled clips into the Achieving Greatness episodes of This New Economy, which are really worth checking out. Just search for This New Economy. So I hope you enjoy. Stay tuned. Welcome to Rocketship.fm. In season 4 of Rocketship, we are diving into everything product and growth.
Rocketship FM is produced in partnership with Product Collective.
We're your hosts, Michael Sacca
and Mike Belsito.
So I guess to start off, I would love to hear kind of about the early days of Dodgeball, kind of your first venture into entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm. We started Dodgeball forever ago. Dodgeball, you know, everyone knows it as the, you know, our grad school thesis project that we sold to Google. But Dodgeball was really just like the catch-all name for a whole bunch of stuff that I worked on leading up to that.
Okay.
So it used to be a web-based city guide. It used to be, a city guide that was on the wireless web. That was before phones had web browsers. And then, around the time that, you know, we were grad school and we didn't have full-time jobs and a lot of our friends were laid off and not working full-time jobs, it turned into this thing to, you know, help you find your friends. And so it was directly built off of, not necessarily a good idea. It was directly built off of, you know, something that we wanted to have in the city because we thought it would make our lives more interesting.
Yeah.
You know, our friends' lives more interesting. And that's pretty much what it did. And what happened is that when we made something that was kind of fun that people liked, it turns out they told their friends and they told their friends. And, you know, that's how the dodgeball stuff kind of came together.
And so was it you, like in your free time, was it kind of everything that you were doing? What did it look like to actually get that to the market?
Gosh, saying like to the market is such a weird.
Okay, but to your friends, right?
we were grad students, right?
Yeah, so yeah.
Our thesis project was what happens if you take a social network and put it on the phone.
Okay.
Because we were thinking, this is like the days, it was pre-Facebook. It was around the time of MySpace, but MySpace was music. It was Friendster. You know, Friendster was the thing. And I think what drove us kind of nutty at the time was this idea that, you know, you would do all this work on Friendster and you'd close the lid on your laptop and then Friendster was done. You know, it's like, you should take Friendster with you. Like, it should change what you do on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
That was kind of our big thing. So, like, you know, I'm not an engineer by training. I know, like, I learned how to code out of, like, one of those learn this in 30 days books. And so the stuff that I make is not very, it's clever, but it's not very good.
Okay.
It's not very scalable. And so, you know, like we used to joke that dodgeball would work. I don't know. I mean, maybe it would work, maybe it wouldn't work, right? Who knows why it would crash, or it was on a shared web host with 200 other websites.
Nice, right.
Something else crashed their website, it took ours down. So I mean, it wasn't very sophisticated. But, you know, once we brought it to Google and we started throwing some engineering resources behind it, you know, Google turned it into a real thing.
Yeah.
We did that for about 2 years and we just weren't able to get them to love the project as much as we did. And that's when we decided to move on.
Cool. Yeah. And so where did kind of the idea for Squarespace come from after leaving Google, right? Like how did that evolve or what did that look like for you?
Square.
Foursquare. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
So I've just been passionate about helping people make websites.
Oh, yeah.
And then after that, we started a payments company. We said,
let's call it Square. Good thing we edit this thing. So,
it's good.
So, yeah, so the idea for Foursquare.
By the way, you're not the first person to do that. It's like once every 10 days.
Okay. It's the square.
A lot of us. A lot of squares.
So where did kind of the evolution there come from for Foursquare?
So we knew that the check-in stuff we knew was really interesting and really powerful. And what we knew, like we knew this at Google, we knew what was powerful about it was not just like, hey, I'm at a bar, come meet me. Because I mean, that's what dodgeball was. Like, I'm at a bar, I'm checking in because I want 10 friends to show up. What was interesting is that I could go into the database by hand, you know, the MySQL command line and say, you know, show me all the places where people have checked in between 11 o'clock and 2 o'clock in the afternoon in the East Village on a Saturday, sort them by distance, rank them by popularity, remove the ones that I've been to already. And that's the list of the best brunch places in New York. And I was like, that, you know, I remember being in our office at Google, like, someone's got to make this thing. You know, this is like a city guide that's crowdsourced by people that's based off of like foot traffic and where people go.
Yeah.
We pitched that internally. We couldn't get people really excited about it. Remember, it was a very, very early, this is before Twitter. This is before like social networks had a real use besides just posting pictures, and you know, flirting and meeting people and stuff. So that's what Foursquare was. And so we knew, you know, the thing with dodgeball was that like, if you didn't have a lot of friends on it, you had no use for it. If you didn't go out to the bar every day, you had. And so we were like, you know, we thought, like, what are we going to do to get regular people that don't have a ton of friends on this thing, that aren't just going out drinking all the time? What do you get them? What do you have to build to make them check in all the time? And that's like, well, let's turn it into a game. What kind of game? Well, let's make a one-player game where you collect all the stuff, and that's the badges. We'll make a two-player game where you compete against your friends, which would be the leaderboard, and a two-player game where you compete against strangers, which would be the mayorships. And so, I mean, we specifically designed those three games hoping one of them would work, and it turns out all three of them worked, right. And then that thing was just, it just kind of took off. You know, the interesting part of the Foursquare story is that, you know, like, it took off as a check-in game, not as the thing that we had dreamed for the MySQL. You know, like, it's not the crowdsourced city guy. I mean, the 8 years in, ask people, if you ask someone on the street, they'll be like, oh, check-ins. Yeah, but what happens to the check-ins? And half of them know that it's a guide, and half of them know that it's, you know, still think it's a check-in app. You know, actually, more of them now are starting to understand, like, what the company does. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we get so many data points. I don't know, it's like 10 million a day, or I think there's something like 11 billion check-ins in the system now. Like, we just know where a lot of phones go over a long period of time. So we can do all sorts of interesting things, from make predictions on the stock market to make advertising more accountable, to build dashboards that represent how people are using physical space. You know, in addition to building all the awesome consumer stuff that we've been doing, you know, almost 10 years now.
Yeah.
But, like, the company has evolved in the same way that the consumer products have, although there was kind of this split. Like, you build stuff for consumers built off the data, and then you build stuff for enterprises built off the data. And I think the stuff that we didn't realize a long time ago was, you know, consumer apps only make money when there's hundreds of millions of people using them. We just never got to hundreds of millions of people. We, you know, 50 million people use the products. That's great. It's a great number, but it's not, you know, that's not Snapchat style numbers. Mm-hmm. But with that amount of data, you can make some really incredible enterprise products, and the enterprise products monetize very, very well.
Right.
So that company is starting to see a lot of success right now.
Nice. Yeah. And I use Foursquare much differently than I did when it launched at South By, now, which is nice, because oftentimes products kind of fade out. But it's nice to be able to use it as even I've grown over the last 8 years.
Yeah, there's like 10 or 20 consumer internet brands that people really care about in the U.S. And, you know, I think we're on that list, and that's a really amazing thing.
Yeah,
you know, I got to remind a lot of people here that, you know, it's like 95% of those apps are no longer around and long since forgotten. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've had a long, hard fought battle to get where we are. But, you know, like, it's pretty great to kind of reflect on it.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com.
Now, back to the show.
Yeah. Well, when you look back, what What kind of sacrifices did you make in order to prioritize Foursquare, right? Like, were there things that you didn't do on maybe your personal life or the time spent that if you just had a 9-to-5, you might have done differently?
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't get married. I didn't have kids. I used to kind of joke with she didn't think it was funny, but with my wife, and I was like, you know, I never thought of doing these two things at the same time. Like, you run a startup and you get married and you have a family. And I was like, no, when Foursquare's over, we'll do that stuff. And then I kind of had this moment of like, Foursquare might never be over. Like, it just might go on forever. So like, why don't we just kind of go on with living the rest of our lives at the same time?
Yeah.
But no, that's like a real, that's a real story. And that's like, those are difficult decisions to make. Someone just asked me, I was out to coffee with an entrepreneur the other day. And, you know, I was telling about my daughter. We have a daughter now and she's 11 and she's like super sweet and super cute. And 11 months. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like tiny. And he's like, well, how did you do Foursquare with the family? And I was like, I waited until Foursquare was kind of stable to do that. And, you know, I don't know if I would have been able to do what we had done 2009, 2010, 2011, 12, you know, with the kid. And I think it, because my priorities have totally switched. Like, I try to get out of here at 5:30. Like, I want to go home and see the baby, you know? But in those early days, we're just like work. And so there's definitely trade-offs, you know? But, you know, now with the company being where it is, and I think where I am with, you know, with Chelsea and our daughter, like, I think things are pretty great.
And so did you even wait for your kind of to build a relationship, even to get married? Did you purposely delay that?
No, I don't know. In hindsight, yeah. It's stupid, right?
Right.
Chelsea and I have been dating since before Foursquare.
Okay.
And it was just, you know, it's just kind of crazy in the early days. And I was just like, that's just another thing to worry about.
Yeah.
And then at one point I was like, we really should just do this. Let's just get married. And we did. And it was awesome.
Yeah. Nice. So, talk to me about kind of, if you don't mind, how she has kind of dealt with the change over the years, right? Cause you were obviously very consumed, most likely, I would assume, with work and Foursquare. Was it ever hard on her?
Yeah, I think so. It's like, you know, there was a lot of traveling and there's a lot of just like, hey, there's this dinner that popped up. I should go to it. This is a lot of stuff like that, mm-hmm. which in hindsight doesn't seem important. You know, I think a lot of our success in the early days is like we were out all the time promoting and hustling, speak at anything, go to anything, go to any dinner, talk about what we're doing, meet with everyone, pitch everyone. And we were involved in everything. I kind of think that we were helping to build like the New York tech ecosystem at the time by doing that because it was like smaller and more fragile. But that was just like, that was kind of my life at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was my life before. That was my life with Dodgeball, my life with Google. And, you know, it wasn't until recently that a lot of that stuff kind of changed a little bit. You know, but Chelsea's also an entrepreneur. She's, she started a makeup company with a friend of hers a couple of years ago. Since having the kid, she's stepped away a little bit. But, you know, she knows what it's like, you know, as much as I do to go through the grind. And she certainly has a lot of empathy for the good days and the bad days.
That's cool. Yeah, that's good. Do you have a story about someone who has sacrificed in order to help you become successful?
I think Chelsea is probably the best example of that, my wife, where... you know, it's a lousy way to put it, but like just kind of like put up with it for a long time. And I think which is like the crazy schedules and a lot of traveling and a lot of the work and just like it's all Foursquare all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's probably the best summary of it, all Foursquare all the time. And by all the time, I mean like for like 4 years, right? Which is like that's like a college career, 4 years. But, you know, it's like it was always super like helpful and balancing to have, you know, you have a life outside of work too.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't, you know, married life with the kid that we have now. And it, you know, wasn't as you know, it was rich and fully, but in different ways than kind of like family life. But yeah. She's like, would balance me out and ground me and kind of bring me back to reality and, you know, make sure that I knew that the rest of the world didn't revolve around Foursquare. You know? I think that's
it's good thing to have. It's really important.
Yeah. Well, I think in the early days, it's really easy to get full of yourself and full of the stuff that you're building. And, you know, we certainly, you know, I went through that phase with Dodgeball, and I went through that phase with Foursquare. And, you know, she was always able to be like, to kind of ground me and make me more self-aware about things. And I think we've been able to, I think companies get really bad and really toxic if the founder is way, way too full of themselves like that. And I think that we have a good, mix of like, you know, being awesome, but being self-aware and having humility and being able to make fun of ourselves and not take ourselves too seriously. And, you know, I think we experienced all those emotions in the early days of Foursquare. And I think we've embedded those things within the culture.
Yeah.
If Foursquare was my first company, it would not be as the culture would not be as strong.
Okay.
And I think getting this shit kicked out of me at Google, like certainly helped prepare me to do a better job in building this company.
Was that kind of like culturally learning like how people work together at a bigger scale, or?
I think it was just like the reality of like, we are so passionate about this thing and we can't get it to work.
Okay.
And you know, like the fundraising story of our Series A was very like grounding and humbling. Right? Like, we had this awesome, like everyone remembers the Foursquare stories. Like, you guys made this thing and you launched it South by Southwest and then it was awesome. And I'm like, no, we came back from South by Southwest. None of the stuff worked. All the users left and 33 venture capitalists said no over the course of 6 months. Like, that's what happened.
Yeah.
And no one remembers that story. You know, I remember it cause we lived through it and I had 33 people say no to my face. And like that's humbling, right? But that's what starts the company off on a good foot. Hmm. And it's not just that, but it was, you know, like the Google experience was humbling too. And then like the year I took a year off after, I was like really depressed after that because I had no projects, no, you know, I worked forever to build that and it was gone.
Yep.
And so yeah, I think all that stuff has kind of contributed to helping make this company the thing. You know, the thing that it is from like a, you know, culture perspective.
Yeah. When, when did you feel like a level of proficiency as an entrepreneur, or even a leader?
I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if I still feel this way. You know, we've gone through so much stuff at Foursquare, and I've been doing company meetings. I'm still a part of them now, but Jeff is kind of the main MC. But I did them for like 7 years.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get up there and you brag about how awesome we are, and sometimes you get up there and you have to like apologize for something we really screwed up. Or you talk about a great success, or you talk about like an awful failure. And you know, just doing that over time has made. Like I'm comfortable doing that now in a way that I wasn't before. And I think I'm comfortable answering difficult questions on the fly. And I know when to, you know, turn up the inspirational stuff, and I know when to, you know, give people real talk. And like, I don't know, I think you just get that from doing it week after week over and over and over again. You know, I work on this side project. I have a soccer team that we started, like a semi-professional soccer team. It's like 2 hours north of the city, and
nice.
It's a nonprofit, and you know, 1,000 people show up at the game. It's not really a huge deal, but it's like I started that thing from scratch. You know, it was kind of like a paternity leave project, and you know, I was just kind of very passionate about solving that problem. And they're all challenging, but once I kind of got into it, I'm like, oh, actually, I'm pretty good at this part. I'm good at this beginning stage and like getting people together and getting people excited about it. And I think that's like, I love to do that. Like there's 1,000 things that need to get done. I don't know how to solve any of them. There's, you know, 10 resources, 10 volunteers available. Like, how do we make this thing happen? Like that's fun. And I like that. And like when I was doing that project and, you know, we're getting started for the second season now, I had this epiphany of like, oh, I'm pretty good at this part of it. It's just been so long since I did something new that I forgot that like I'm actually okay at that part.
Right.
That energized me to come back to work after maternity leave and be like, all right, what can we fix here? Like, I can fix stuff now. What do you want to fix?
Totally. Yeah. No, that's awesome. It's a great analogy too. So I guess looking forward, right? You mentioned like Foursquare may never end. What's kind of the vision for the immediate future of Foursquare as it evolves?
Well, I mean, a company generates revenue now. We generate a significant amount of revenue. And so when you generate a significant amount of revenue, like, you can do lots of different things, right? Without getting into specifics, like, you become really interesting to lots of companies. You have the opportunity to, you can imagine taking the company public someday, you know? These are things that we are not planning for. They're not like on our radar. But when the company goes from not generating a significant amount of revenue to generating a significant amount of revenue, you have options that you didn't have before. And so, you know, I think when you're in the early days of startup mode, your exit is like it's acquisition. And, you know, that's certainly been something that has been presented to us many times in the course of the company. And, you know, it's just not something that we wanted to do when it was presented to us. Mm-hmm. And now we're at the point where it's like, that's not our only option. Like,
right.
there's other options at this, and they're not fantasy land options. Like, the thing could, you know, is really starting to work. And so I don't know what the ending is,
yeah.
But I can see, you know, give or read like a choose your own adventure book and you can flip a little ahead. Like, I can see what the multiple endings are.
Yeah.
I just don't know what the ending is.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, thanks, man. That's all I need to put it together. Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on and your time.
Yeah, it's always fun to talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
Especially people want to talk about like the, you know, how hard it is as opposed to how glamorous it is.
Right. I'm kind
of over the glamorous part of it because, like, you know, 80% of our experience has been like the struggle
part. The hard part. I know. You just can't always put that out there when you're in the middle of it, right?
Yeah, which is why it's nice to be on the other side of it because then you can really, you can start to talk openly about it. And this is the thing. It's like it's just the story that's not told that often.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a story that people need to hear. It's like, it's nearly impossible to survive the middle stages. And like, if you can do it, like, there's good stuff on the other side. It's just really hard to do.
And it takes a long time. I mean, you guys are in what, year eight now?
Yeah. Depending on when you started counting.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, when we did our, what was it, Series A or Series B, it was either, I think it was Fred Wilson, was like, listen, you know, if you go down the Series B path, you're on the road to becoming a profitable company, and it would probably take you, you know, 8 to 10 years. I'm like, 8 to 10 years? That's crazy talk. Like, we're going to do it in 2 years.
Right.
That's the arrogance that you have around the Series A, Series B. But it's like 8 years, it's just starting to work. So I'm like, fuck. Knew what he was talking about. How
right.
different. but no, it's true. And you know, if you go back and you look at, you know, Twitter, Facebook, like, how long will it take Snapchat? You know, that's the timeline. And so that's how it works. It takes a long time to make stuff come together.
If you want to find out more about rocketship.fm, go to rocketship.fm. It's pretty simple, right? Make sure you subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss future episodes in this series. And if you like today's episode, tell a friend.
Or two friends, or a lot of friends. We would love it if you would spread the word.
You could sign up for our newsletter. We have partnered with Product Collective, Mike Belcito's company, to bring you even more content each week. So if you sign up for the newsletter, you're going to get content from Rocketship FM. You're also going to get detailed product content from Product Collective, which is incredibly valuable. And as entrepreneurs, it's one of the most important topics for us to stay up on. So go to rocketship.fm and sign up for our newsletter. If you enjoy this content, leave us a quick review, or tell a friend, or share the link on Twitter. Anything helps to get the word out about the show. We really appreciate it. We'll be right back here in just a couple days.